All right, Jabosei, good morning. Let's begin. The beautiful daf ahead of us today. Today's daf is Samech Hei, 65. We are picking up at the two dots on Samech Hei Amud Aleph, six lines down from the top. Aval Amru Chachamim Kolov. I want to thank Rabbi Neuberger for giving the shiur while I was gone. It's chus to be back learning with all of you. So let's begin. Aval Amru Chachamim Kolov. So remember again, the Mishnah spoke about the simanim for an oaf, the simanim for a bird. So we're going to get into that a little bit more today. The Mishnah spoke about this idea about the claws. Everything is the principle kind of mentioned by the Mishnah, because as the word is in the Gemara, Torah doesn't really as much give down the simanim of a kosher bird as much as it does give down the behaviors of a kosher bird, or perhaps more appropriately stated, tells us the behaviors of a non-kosher bird. Right? So if a bird is a bird of prey, ultimately, again, that is a non-kosher bird. The Mishnah then gave us some of the simanim of a bird of prey, which is, again, when it perches, two claws are in front, two claws are in back, and that seems to be the simon for how it seizes the prey afterwards. So the Gemara says as follows, Tanya, Rabbi Gamliel Omer, Doreis va'ochel, biadua shutami. So also Rabbi Gamliel says, if the bird claws and eats, we'll discuss what this means in just a moment, but if the bird claws and eats, that is a sign, ultimately, again, that it is an oaf tame. It's not a kosher bird. Yeshla etzba yisera, if it has an extra, literally finger, but it means like toe, right? Then ultimate v'zefek, v'kur kabano niklof, and its crop and gizzard can be peeled. Biyadua shu tahar. Ultimately, again, this is the simen of a tahar bird. Rabbi Eliezer of Tzadok Omer, Moschin lo chut shal mashichav. So this is actually very interesting. But Eliezer of Tzadok says, there is a very simple test for a kosher bird. What's the test? You take a chut shal mashichav. So we'll say a chut literally means a string. Shal mashichav means ultimately a string that the bird could kind of perch itself on. So what are you looking for? Im cholek es raglov shtein lekan v'shtein lekan. So if the bird splits its toes, two on one side of the string, and two on another side of the string. So therefore, again, tame. Ultimately, again, that bird is tame. That is a sign, ultimately, that is a sign that halacha lemaisa, it's a bird of prey. So we'll say, so the idea over here is the two claws on one side, two claws on the other, seem to indicate that this bird does a lot of grabbing of stuff, which is indicative of a bird of prey. However, shalosh lekan va'achos lekan, but if it, when it perches, it has three toes on one side, one toe on the other side, then tahar, then halacha lemaisa, such a bird is tahar. Rav Shimon Elazar says, Kol ov hakolet min ha'avir, tami. Rav Elazar ben Tzadok says, well, this is actually another interesting qualification. Any bird, kolet literally means collects or absorbs. But we'll really see what it really means is grabs. Any bird that grabs something else in the air is going to be tami. Rashi says over here, kolet min ha'avir, if you look, it's the first short line in Rashi, kolet min ha'avir, Rashi says, Kishazarkin lo maicho, when you throw the bird food, kolto l'soch piv, it grabs it into its mouth, umekablo min ha'avir, it grabs it from the air. Now we're going to see what this means in just a moment. So the Gemara says, really, is that true? But what about the tzefirta? Tzefirta nami miklat kolta. So we'll say the tzefirta, which is the name of the bird, which Rashi points out over here, is makirin hayu shihi tahora v'zeshma. Everyone knows that the tzefirta is a kosher bird. Everyone knows that's a kosher bird. So what happens? So tzefirta nami miklat kalta. So we'll say the tzefirta bird also grabs stuff mid-air, yet halacha l'maisa, so we know what? We know that the tzefirta is considered to be a kosher bird. So what's going on over here? We'll say, listen to this. This is actually quite amazing. Amar Abaye, kolet va'ochel ka'aminam. Abaye says what it means is as follows. Kolet va'ochel means, we'll say, it grabs stuff mid-air and eats it mid-air, without first putting the prey down. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Kolit mina avir. I'm sorry. Kolit va'ochel she'ino manicho la'aretz atshol yivla'enu. Because ultimately, again, it doesn't put it down on the ground before it goes ahead and consumes it. So both said, it's actually quite amazing. What we're seeing over here, and by the way, these qualifications are accepted halacha l'maisa. So it's really actually quite fascinating, which is that not all birds of prey, apparently, are tame. So apparently it's only certain types of birds of prey. What type of bird of prey? So we'll say ultimately, again, the type of bird of prey, see, it appears, so let's analyze it just a moment. What type of bird of prey? The type of bird that grabs its prey mid-air and eats the prey mid-air. Not, however, it appears that a type of bird which grabs its prey mid-air, puts it down, then consumes it, right? Ultimately could be, not all circumstances, but could still be a kosher bird. So we'll say, so there's something amazing. What's happening over here? You see, we'll say, remember again, Sefer HaChinuch brings down that so much of the laws of kashrus are predicated on the principle of you are what you eat. We recognize that every single animal has a teva, and whatever you ingest, you don't just ingest the physicality of that entity, but you ingest some of its teva as well. That's why in general, we try to stay away from animals which generally exhibit an overly aggressive animalistic behavior. So what's amazing over here is apparently in the bird kingdom, it's the same as well. That animal, that bird, which is a bird of prey, which consumes its prey mid-air, that's aggressive. That's aggressive. Apparently, again, that's the type of prey we're ultimately, that's the type of bird we're not going to eat. The fact that one animal eats another animal, we'll say, Zohi Darko Shalolam. We all see animals, right? Zohi Darko Shalolam. But apparently there's a way to do that. This notion of grabbing it mid-air, not putting it down, eating it mid-air, that type of aggressiveness, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not want us ingesting. Good. Achirim Omrim, others say, Shachinim Tmeim Tamei. Any animal, so you're both, this is actually very interesting. This is a little bit different. The Achim are coming along and they're saying as follows. Let's say you don't know the status of a particular animal. Klal Gadol is that animals live with their own kind. So therefore, if you see a bird which lives with other tummy birds, then what? Tummy. Im Tahorim, if you see a bird which lives with Tahor birds, then chances are Tahor. So apparently, again, like type of animals seem to live with each other. Shabbosai, by the way, there's an incredible, incredible musr with this as well, right? If you live with Tmeim, you become Tamei. You live with Tahorim, you're Tar. Ay l'rasha, ay l'shcheino. Right? Tov l'tzadik, tov l'shcheino. Shabbosai, often we think that as long as we're doing the right thing, we remain unimpacted or uninfluenced by our surroundings. Simply not true. What goes on around us and who we surround ourselves with have a dramatic impact on the people we become and the lives we lead. Hashochin im hatmeim tamei. Im tahorim tahor. Incredible. So, Kimban, whose opinion does this reflect? Kirabi Eliezer. The sign of Eliezer, Omer. Lo lechina mahalach zarzir etel oreif. It's not for no reason that the zarzir dwells. The zarzir is a type of bird that it dwells with the oreif, with the raven. Ela mipnei shehu mino. Ultimately, again, but rather, why does the zarzir dwell with the oreif? Because we'll say, just as the oreif is a tahor animal, so too, again, the zarzir is a tamei animal as well, and therefore one tamei animal dwells with the other. I feel Tamei Rabbanon. The truth is, Rabbosai, this could even be reflective of the view of the Rabbanon. How so? Shachin benidme karmina. Rabbosai, it could very well be that, remember again, the Rabbanon are the ones who said, or even according to the Rabbanon could say it just means the bird has to possess two qualities. In order, if we don't know the status of a bird, in order to assume that it's tamei, we would say if it dwells with tamei birds and resembles tamei birds, then what? It's a tamei bird. If it looks like a tamei bird, lives with tamei birds, then it is a tamei bird. So we'll say, so bottom line, what comes down to what the Rambam accepts, and Shulchan Aruch accepts in this as well, is first of all this identifying mark that if the bird, when it perches, places two claws in front, two claws in back, that is generally indicative of a bird of prey. But we see a very interesting qualification over here, which is there are certain birds of prey, however, which are kosher. Which are kosher. Now again, the Gemara is not giving me an exhaustive list over here. We'll get into that later on. But for our purposes right now, one of the major distinctions are birds of prey, which consume their prey midair, will be tamei. Birds of prey, or certain birds of prey, which will grab their prey midair, but will put it down before consuming it, can potentially be kosher. Good. Obechagovim. We'll say onto grasshoppers. So remember again, the Mishnah gave four different criteria in order for grasshoppers ultimately again to be kosher. Four leg. Well, we're going to see them in size. The Gemara says as follows. Obechagovim. Koshi yeshlo. So let me just. Good. Actually, you know, we'll see it inside. So bechagavim. So we'll see. Here we go. My rubas. So remember again, one of the qualifications was that the wings of the grasshopper must cover the entire body of the grasshopper. That was one of the qualifications. Must cover the majority of the body. So the Gemara says, my rubo, what exactly does that mean, the majority of the body? Rov arko. It means the majority of the length of the grasshopper. So the wings must cover the majority of the length of the grasshopper. Ramile, rov hekefo. Others say, it's the majority of the circumference, right? Of the hekif of the grasshopper. Rav Papa says this is actually very interesting because it says a machlokes hilchach ba'inyan rov arko uba'inyan rov hekif. So also the Gemara does hear something very interesting, which doesn't usually happen. You know, when you have a machlokes in the Gemara, so usually it's the Gemara's job to figure out who's right and who's wrong. Here the Gemara says because it's a machlokes, therefore we accept both. In order for the grasshopper to be kosher, so the wings have to cover the majority of the length and the circumference of the body. Very interesting. So now we come to a couple of very interesting cases. Tan Rabbanan, ein lo achsha va'asid legadol la'achar zman. We'll say, what happens if a grasshopper, now this is switching gears. So first criteria was the wings. Second criteria, we'll say, was what we call the kartzin, the jumping legs, right? The grasshopper has to have a minimum of 4 legs, and it has to have 2 jumping legs. What happens if the grasshopper does not have jumping legs now, but it will develop it at a later time? So we're going to ask this question a variety of different species, which gets into some very interesting halacha lemaisa cases. So in lo achshav, it doesn't have the jumping legs now, but va'asid legadol la'achar zman. But emir tzashem shatov mitzlachos, it's going to get its jumping legs later on. So we'll say kigon hazachol. For example, the zachol, which is a type of Rashi says min chagav belashan arami. It's a type of grasshopper. So we'll say, so what's the status of this? You hear what the shaila is? In order for the grasshopper to be kosher, it has to have jumping legs. What happens if the nature of the species is right now it doesn't have jumping legs? But what? I know it's going to develop it later on. So what's the halacha? What's the status of that grasshopper? Mutter. It's okay. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi, Omer. Asher. So we'll say. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi quotes the pasuk over here that says, "Asher lo kira ayin," that it doesn't have. Now the way the pasuk reads is, "Achze tochlu mikol sheretzov." This is what you are permitted to eat from any of the sheretzov, which Rabbi Yossi includes grasshoppers, right? Haholich al arba that has walks on 4 legs. Asher lo kira ayin. Rabbi Yossi, and here's what's interesting. Asher lo kira ayin, this is an interesting example of what we call a kri and a ksiv. Kri and a ksiv means the word is written one way, but it's spoken, it's articulated and understood in a different way. So if you notice again, the lo in the pasuk is spelled lamed aleph. The way it's understood is, now lamed aleph lo means no. The way it's really understood is lamed vav lo, which means to it. Asher lo kira ayin means that ultimately, again, the grasshopper will only be kosher. What if it has jumping legs? But yet it's read, Asher lo kira'ayim. It does not have kira'ayim. So how do we reconcile this? Watch this. Asher lo kira'ayim. What does this come to teach us? Afa pi she'in lo achshav va'asid legada la'achar zman. It comes to teaching you, I will say that what? Asher lo kira'ayim comes to teach me that even if it doesn't have the kira'ayim, even if it does not have the jumping legs now, but will develop them at a later time, ultimately, again, the grasshopper will be kosher. What's an example of that? My zachal. Apparently, the zachal grasshopper, Rabbi Yossi, when it's young, doesn't have jumping legs. When it gets older, it will develop it. Rabbi Yossi, now the chiddush over here is, when can you eat the zachal? When can you eat it? Now. Right? You don't have to wait till it develops the jumping legs, because I know it will. Ultimately, again, it's kosher now. Amar Abaye. So Abaye says, so the Gemara says, Askira. So we'll say Rashi says, Iskira ve'in lo kartsulim bekatnu. So gudim la'achrazman. So we'll say Abaye says, same idea, right? There's this other grasshopper called the Askira, same idea. It doesn't have the kartsulim. We'll say the kartsulim are the jumping legs. It doesn't have jumping legs now. We'll develop it later on. Ultimately, that is kosher. So we'll say, see something amazing, by the way, which is what? That potential for something creates kashrus as well. If it works for grasshoppers, can you imagine what it does for us? Right? I know the grasshopper is going to develop jumping legs. That makes it kosher. So I want to say, so the good news is the Ribbono Shel Olam never just sees us for who we are now. He sees us for what we can become. Each of us has those jumping legs inside of us as well, right? We have that incredible potential. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us credit for the potential we have, even if it has not yet been actualized, just like the Zachal, just like the Aska. Incredible. Ten Rabbanam. Es Eilu Em Tochelu. So we'll say the Pasuk says, Es Eilu Em Tochelu. So we'll say, see, interestingly enough, then the Torah goes on to articulate the various types of grasshoppers. As sa'ar belemino, salam leminehu, chargo leminehu, vesachagav leminehu. So we'll say, so all these different types of grasshoppers, and each of them adding in a word, leminehu, or leminehem. So watch this. So it says the Gemara, Tan Rabbanon, es eilu mehem tochelu, es arba, arba. So we'll say, now what's interesting is as follows. Torah goes out of its way to articulate different types of species of locusts, and also adds in the word leminehem, or leminehu, according to, and their species. So watch this. So the Gemara says, arba. So we're just going to go now through various different types of locusts and what's included in their in their locust families. Arba, we'll say what's arba? Zegovai. So we'll say these are all just different types of locusts. Salam. What's salam? Ze rishon. Chargol. Ze nipul. Chagov. Ze gadion. Okay, so we'll say all different types of grasshoppers. Matamulomar. Leminehu. Lemino. Liminehu, limino, liminehu. So we'll say, ultimately, why does the pasuk need to say, after every type of grasshopper that's mentioned, the Torah adds in the word mino, minehu, minehu, minehu. Three minehus, one mino. What does this come to teach me? Dalipamu. Altogether, I have four words. Lahavit sipores kramim. So we'll say, to include other types of grasshoppers. The sipores kramim. So we'll say, the sipores kramim was this type of arba. Rashi says, de'in lo gabachas, it doesn't have a bald head. We're going to discuss this in just a little bit. So apparently, again, it's the type of grasshopper that lives in the vineyards, the kramim. V'yochna Yerushalmis. So we'll say, so apparently, again, there's another type of grasshopper, the Yuchna Yerushalmis. At least that was Zochet to be called the Yerushalmi, right? You see, this grasshopper has a mela that I don't have, right? This grasshopper is called Yerushalmi. So Yuchna Yerushalmis, V'artzuvya V'hazarbonis. And Rabbi said these are all different types of grasshoppers. Debei Rabbi Shmuel Tanu, Eilu Kloli Klolos, Ve'ilu Prate Prate. So Rabbi said, Debei Rabbi Shmuel comes along and says, no. This Minehu, Mino, Minehu, 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 and as well as each, so we'll say, here's what we have in this pasuk. You have the mention of four different types of grasshoppers. Arba, Salam, Chargol, and Cheged. Those are four, what we call pratim, right? Those are four, ultimately, again, prate pratas. Those are four specific mentions. And then after each of those, you have the words Mino, Minehu, Minehu, Minehu. So we just wanted to say, so the first approach was, well, each of those explicitly articulated types of grasshoppers refer to their specific types. The Mino come to include something else. Tanya Yerushalmi says, no. There's something much more profound that is unfolding over here, Bosei. There is a profound set of prate klole klolos and prate pratos. There are major klolim, ultimately major inclusive principles and major exclusionary principles that are being espoused as part of this pasuk. Here we go. This is really amazing. So we're going to see some overlap between the two drushas. Arbe. So I'll say, what does arbe come to refer to? Zegovai. So that refers to arbe, I will say, actually is like, what do they call it? Like a heading. A classification. Right? It's a classification. Right? Excellent. Ari Lichtman. Right? Good. A classification, right? Under that classification, I would say, then you have multiple subfamilies underneath that arba. So watch this. Se'arba zegovai. So I'll say, so the Arba family includes Govai. Apparently, Govai is also like another larger category. Limino. So I'll say, what does the Mino that follows it come to include? Lahavi Amadeis. Lahavi Tzipores Kramin. So I'll say, that comes to include the Tzipores Kramin. So I'll say, now, what's interesting about this over here? Now, the common denominator amongst all of these Rashis is Tzipores Kramin, Tap Rashi, Samechei Amadeis, Min Arba. So this is another type of grasshopper. Shalishneim ein gabachas. They don't have a bald head. Now I will say, Now what that means is these types of grasshoppers have hair. Now what we're going to see, by the way, is different types of grasshoppers. Some have a smooth head. Others have like these prickly things that come out that the Gemara calls hair. Now the common denominator amongst this first category is shalishneim in gabachos. These do not have a bald head, i.e. they have hair. So the Gemara says, in li ela haba ve'eino gabachas. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam shehakol nehyeh bedvaro. So says the Gemara as follows. In li ela habos. Now, from this classification, what I know is as follows. I know that if the grasshopper comes with the four qualities mentioned in the Mishnah, right, ve'ein lo gabachas, and it doesn't have a bald head, meaning it has hair on its head. So I know that this type of grasshopper is kosher. If it has the four qualities mentioned in the Mishnah, and it has hair on its head, there's a whole reason why the Gemara is phrasing this as it doesn't have a bald head, but it's not important for us right now. And it doesn't have a bald head, I know that that type of grasshopper is kosher. Habo ve'yesh lo gabachas minayim. I will say, how do I know that if a grasshopper possesses the four qualities mentioned in the Mishnah, but it does have a bald head, how do I know that such a grasshopper will also be kosher? Talmud lomar, salam. Therefore, I will say, the pasuk comes along and mentions the salam. What's the salam? Here we go. Salam. Zen nipo. I will say, this refers to another type of grasshopper called the nipo. Liminehu. So we'll say, what does the word minehu, which follows salam, what does that come to include? Lahavi esa ushchaf. That comes to include the ushchaf. So we'll say, what's the common denominator with all of these? The common denominator ultimately is, so the Gemara says, ve'ein li ela haba, ve'ein lo gabachas. So again, ultimately, again, I only know about something that comes, a type of grasshopper that comes with all four qualities mentioned in the Mishnah. Ve'in lo gabachas, and it does not have a bald head. I'm sorry, Bose, by the way, I reversed it. The first category, Bose, was yesh. I'm reading correctly. Ve'in lo gabachas. So Bose, I only know it does not have a bald head. Haba ve'yesh lo gabachas. So Bose, what happens if a grasshopper comes and it does have a bald head? Or haba, Bose, the word haba means it comes together with the four qualities mentioned in the Mishnah. Remember again, no grasshopper discussion gets off the ground without the four qualities of grasshoppers mentioned in the Mishnah. So those four qualities are taken for granted. That's understood. What about haba ve'in lo zanav? So what if a grasshopper comes with the four qualities, but what? It doesn't have a tail. Or haba ve'yesh lo zanav. Or it does come, it has all four qualities, and it does have a tail. Minayim. So we'll say, how do I know that this type of grasshopper will be kosher? Talmud lomar chargo. Therefore, we'll say the pasuk comes along and says chargo. So we'll say, so you see, by the way, in this limud over here of Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel, was that Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel? Yeah. Then in this Debei Rabbi Shmuel, we'll say you begin to see that their understanding this pasuk is a much more complex pyramid, one layer building on the next of Klali Prat. So we'll say, comes on Tamomer chargo. What's chargo? Zer Rishon. We'll say this refers to another type of grasshopper called the Rishon. Leminehu, what does Leminehu come to include? Lahavi esa karsefes. The esa shalchonis. It comes to include the karsefes and the shalchonis. The ein li ela haba the ein lo gabachas. So I will say, still, I only know about a grasshopper that comes with all four qualities, and it doesn't have a bald head. Haba the yesh lo gabachas. But if a grasshopper comes along with the four qualities, and it has a bald head, haba the ein lo zanav. Or it comes with the four qualities, but it doesn't have a tail. V'yesh lo zanav, or haba v'yesh lo zanav. Or it comes with the four qualities, and it does have a tail. V'ein rosho aruch. And I will say, now watch this, we're introducing another quality. Or it comes along, and what? Ein rosho aruch. We'll say, ein rosho aruch means its head is not elongated. So again, we're going to discuss that in the world of grasshoppers, there's also different types of heads with the grasshoppers. Some grasshoppers have a longer head, some have a shorter head. Haba Verosha Aruch, or if a grasshopper comes and its head is longer, Minayin. So we'll say, so essentially what we're asking over here is as follows. From the Mishnah, I know about the four qualities, basic qualities necessary to make a grasshopper kosher. The Shaila then comes up, what happens with the other qualities of grasshoppers? How do I know that these qualities will also still allow a grasshopper to be kosher? So the Gemara says, Amrit, Hare atadan binyan av mishlashta. Now we'll say we can make a binyan av from the three categories of grasshoppers mentioned up until this point in time. So the Gemara says as follows. Good. So let's make a look at Rashi for just a moment. Actually, not yet. So Gemara says, what do we say? Binyan mishlashtam. Lo rei arba kirei chargol, velo rei chargol kirei arba. So we'll say on one hand, the arba is not like the chargol, and the chargol is not like the arba, as we already said. Velo rei shtein kirei salam. And on both sides, both the chargol and the arba are both not like the salam. Velo rei salam kirei shneim. And the salam is also not like arba and chargol. So we'll say, so what is the common denominator between them? Hatzat hashava shebahen. So we'll say, so the tzat hashava is, the common denominator is, shiyishlo dalid raglayim. Each is supposed to have 4 feet. The arba knafayim, 4 wings. The kartzulim, and jumping legs. Ukinafav chofen es rubo. And ultimately, its wings cover the majority of its body. Well, so remember again, we define what does majority mean? Majority means majority of length and circumference. Remember again, these are the 4 qualities. So we'll say, so the Gemara is saying over here, that each of the 3 types of grasshoppers really don't resemble each other. What's the common denominator they have? Pretty much what the Mishnah mentioned. Each of them have 4 legs, each of them have 4 wings, each of them have jumping legs, and they each have wings which cover the majority of the body. Af kol shiyesh, therefore we'll say, what a binyan av says, is a binyan av is a common denominator. Once you create that common denominator, that allows you to apply that common denominator to other circumstances as well. Which I will now say, af kol shiyesh lo arba raglayim va'arba knafayim. Therefore we'll say, I will say, any locust, right, any grasshopper, that has 4 feet, 4 wings, kartzulim, jumping legs, ukinaf of chofen esrubo, and its wings cover the majority of the body, so too will also be a kosher locust. Okay? So we'll say, so look at Rashi for just a moment. It's Hatzad HaShav, we'll say, it's the last of the short lines in Rashi. Hatzad HaShav HaShavohen, Afko, V'afilu Rosho Arach. Now we'll say, now what the Gemara is really saying, I saw, and it's actually very exciting. What the Gemara is saying, because remember again, we just got a crash course on grasshopper anatomy. It was quite riveting. Which is what I will say, so we've got bald heads, hairy heads, we've got long heads, short heads, all different kinds of things over here. What Gemara seems to be saying now is that those other qualities actually do not matter. What matters is what? The 4 criteria. As long as you have 4 legs, 4 wings, jumping legs, and your wings cover the majority of the body, you are good to go. Hair on your head, bald head, long head, short head, doesn't make any difference. We don't pay attention. Let's look at Rashi. Rashi says, "Va'afilu rosha aruch." So therefore, even if the head of the grasshopper was long, ulekamei parich malat zada sheva shebahen shekein ein roshan aruch v'kartzulin garsinon ubein haytana latana deleel leka alahach chash. So remember again, this opinion Av says this is the common denominator. If this is the common denominator, all of the other criteria simply become unimportant. I v'halo hatzartzur hazeh. I will say, but the tzartzur, which was one of the so-called subset categories, hazeh yesh lo ab raglayim v'dalir knafayim v'kartzulin. I will say, 1 second, if that's true, the tzartzur, which itself has 4 legs, 4 wings, jumping legs, kinaf av chofen esrubo, its wings cover the majority of its body. Yochol yehei mutter. You might have thought that ultimately, again, this becomes mutter. Tamud lomar chagov. Therefore, we'll say the pasuk says chagov, which teaches me that what? Shishmo chagov. Ishmo chagov. So we'll say shishmo chagov. So interestingly enough, it has to have the general classification as a chagov. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Tamalomar chagov, delo itzrich da estrabu kala shavnu bar basman. So we'll say, see, here's the problem with the binyan av. If you're correct that you establish this common denominator, that as long as the grasshopper has these four qualities, the grasshopper is kosher, then of course we have a problem, which is, why do I need these additional categories? Why do I need chagov, right? If I'm learning out all of this stuff from the previous categories, then this additional category of chagov really becomes unnecessary. To which the Gemara says, Sheshmo chagov, Rashi says, V'chol ha'amur l'malo shmam chagovim. So I'll say, here's what's interesting. According to this approach of Osei, here's what I have. From Arba, Salam, and Chargol, I learn out all of the qualities necessary to be a kosher locust. Right? So I know that, again, four legs, jumping legs, four wings. Wings cover the majority of the body. That's what makes a kosher locust. What I learn from the word Chagov? Osei Chagov, apparently, according to this approach in the Gemara, is like a generic phrase for locusts. All locusts are called chagav, or I should say, all kosher locusts are known in a general sense as a chagav. So that last chagav in the pasuk is actually not coming to contribute to the qualities of kosher locusts, but rather it's coming along to teach me the general classification of a kosher locust. Kosher locust is known as chagav. So it says the Gemara, well, now we have an interesting issue, which is as follows. So the Gemara takes a step back. The Gemara says that tzirtzur, which apparently is a type of locust, has all four qualities of kosher locust, yet we know that halacha lemaisa it's not kosher. So I don't understand, how is that so? Once you've established the binyan av, you tell me the binyan av says any locust that conforms to these four qualities is kosher. The tzartzer conforms to the four qualities, yet it's not kosher. So what's going on over here? To which the Gemara says, tamomer chagov. In order to be kosher, I will say sheshmo chagov. Ultimately, again, in order for a locust to be kosher, it has to be known at least in a generic sense as what? As a chagov. At least in a generic sense as a chagov. Ishmo chagov, yochol ein bo kol ha-simanim halalu. So I might have thought, well, maybe then being called a chagov is enough. Even if it doesn't possess all of the qualities, it should still ultimately, again, be kosher because it's classified as a chagov. Tamud lomar liminehu. Therefore, what's the pasuk says, "Lemineu ad sheyehebo kol ha-simanim halalu." No, it's not enough to say. See, what's interesting? It has to be known as a chagov, but it's not enough to be known as a chagov. Essentially, it has to have the classification as a chagov, but what? But also, it has to have all four of the simanim. Parech Rav Achai. So, I'll say, Rav Achai raises the kasha. Why don't you say, "Malahanoch shekein ein roshan aruch"? So, I'll say, Rav Achai says, "Well, maybe at the end of the day." Maybe all of the locusts mentioned above, say the common denominator is Ein Rosh and Aruch. They do not have a long head. So maybe again, that's ultimately another qualification for a kosher locust, that it doesn't have a long head. V'chitema, kevan d'shavu b'dalit simanim, ma'isinon v'lo parachinon. So I say, maybe we'll say no. Once the locust, maybe we'll go back to what we said before. Once the locust, I will say what? Once the locust has the Dalet Simonim, maybe we don't really care that much about ultimately, again, the other qualifications, not the other qualifications, but the other attributes or characteristics of the locust. Ihachi, if that's the case, Chargol Nami, the Shavilahu, Lo Lichtiv, Viti Sime Arba. If that's the case, I will say that all I need are the four characteristics and nothing else. Then why even the need to mention chargol at all? Let me just say, now what we're seeing over here is, if it's really true that the binyan av is the be-all, end-all for establishing the kashrus of locusts, then halacha lemaisa, I don't even need all of the items to be mentioned in the pasuk. Lo lichtiv, don't mention chargol in the pasuk. V'tisi me'arba v'salam. Right? Ultimately, again, just learn out from arba and salam. Eli ikel mifrach, rather both say the kash you can raise is what? Malahanach shekin ein lahem zanav. So I say you can ask that the other ones ultimately again do not have a tail. Hachinami ikal mifrach. Malahanach shekin ein roshan aruch. You can ask the same kashya. These other locusts do not have a long head. So Rabbi says, so rather, what do we do? Ela amar Rav Achai. So Rabbi comes along Rav Achai, and he advances a different drasha. He says, Salam yiserehu. Rabbi says, in reality, the Sal'om mentioned in the Pasuk is extra. We actually do not need the Sal'om. So therefore, I will say, why? Salam Yiseru, lo lichtov rachmana salam. So I will say, watch this. Why is the Sal'om extra? Because I have a simple etzah. Don't write Sal'om. V'tisi me'arbe u'michargo. And I will say, I can learn out everything you ever wanted to know about Logis can be learned out from where? From Arba and Chargol. So the Gemara, Demai Parachta, because what was the percha you brought up? Mala Arba, the in lo gabachas. So your concern was about Arba, that it doesn't have a bald head. Hare Chargol, the yish lo gabachas. Ultimately, again, the Chargol does have a bald head. Mala Chargol, the yish lo zanav. I, the Chargol has a tail. Yet again, Hari Arba, the Inlo Zanav. So essentially what we're saying is, in this classification, what's in this list that the Torah gives us, each of these types of locusts possesses some different trait than the other. And between them all, you essentially catch everything. If you're catching everything between them, Rabbi Osai, then ultimately, again, the sal'am is extra. So between Arba and Chargol, so let's say, what we're getting, traditionally saying, there's two things happening over here. From this list, we get the four qualifications for a kasher locust, right? The four legs, the two jumping legs, the four wings, and ultimately wings covering the majority of the body. In addition to that, each of these types of locusts also just has different physical traits. So from that, we're also learning all the different physical traits that are still, that can be present, and yet the locusts still remain kosher. All of this is being done together. So we'll say, here's the problem. I have everything I need, and yet I don't really need salam. So why is salam there? Salam the kasav rahmana lamali. So ultimately, again, if everything I needed to learn about locusts, I'm already learning out from chargol and arba, then why do I need salam? So let's remember again, we're not asking about chagov. Why aren't we asking about chagov? Because what did we do with chagov just a few moments ago? We said by chagov is a catch-all phrase. In order for a locust to be kosher, it has to be known by the name of chagov. So that chagov is not really coming to teach me additional characteristics about the locust, but rather it's coming to say kosher locusts are all referred to as chagov. So now chagov, I know what it's used for. Between arba and chargol, I get all the different traits, ultimately of kosher, all the different physical qualifications or physical attributes of kosher locusts. So I come down, therefore, to one seemingly extra word, which is the one that is mentioned as salam. So what does salam come to teach me? So the Gemara says, salam de kasev rachmar alamali, im eino inyan legufo, if I don't need it ultimately again to teach me anything about the body of the locust, tenehu inyan l'rosho aruch. Ultimately, use it to teach you that what Rabbi Osai, it is not just a locust with a short head that is kosher, but ultimately, again, the locust with a long head that is kosher as well. So, salam. So, Rabbi Osai, based on where we're holding right now, what we have over here is as follows. Arba and Chargol come to teach me the halachos concerning all the different attributes of the locust that can be kosher. And I will say, those two together really teach me the four dominant attributes, which again, as we mentioned already a number of times, four legs, two jumping legs, four wings. Wings cover the majority of the body. It's also taught me, tail, bald head, hairy head, it's all fine. Chagov comes to teach me, well, let's go in order. Salam, now according to Bachai, comes to teach you that what Rabbi Osai, whether it has a long head or a short head, ultimately it's going to become kosher. And Chagov comes to teach me that in order for it to be kosher, it must be known by the name Chagov. Chagov doesn't come to teach you something about any of the characteristics or physical characteristics of the locust, but rather in order to be called a kosher locust, it must have the name Chagov. Shachavos, we'll stop over here for today.